somebody says, whoa. You're selling the 190s and buying the 195s, and they go, that means you're what? What was your bearish? You're bearish, right?
Yeah.
Selling the 190s, buying the 195s, you're bearish. Trade goes monstrously against
it. I love it.
Oh my god, the stock went to 200. You should have gotten out of that trade. Why? Why get out of this trade? But you knew getting into it what your risk was. Don't kid yourself. You knew exactly what the risk was when you got into this trade. You knew that this risk was a $5 wide spread. What's the most you can lose in a $5 wide spread? $5. You cost $2 up front. So your definitive risk is what? $3. Then a customer turns around and goes, whoa, wait. But I want to put a stop order on this that if we crack above 195 or if we crack above 190, I want to buy back the whole spread. Why would you want to define your risk on a defined risk trade?
To lose less.
To lose less. Tell you what, you didn't see many contracts there. Save yourself some commissions. Why don't you just do less contracts? Never define your risk on a defined risk trade. Because the chances of you stopping out, okay, are all but assured. Now I'm going to show you guys something mathematically in an easy way, and then later on I'm going to beat you up about it for like 20 minutes. Okay? Here's the mathematics behind this. Okay. There's a probability associated with this trade. And there's a probability of success associated with this trade. In fact, I'll show you right here in the trade tab. Okay. This trade, see where I have it highlighted right here? Probability of expiring. Okay. Says 41%. That means there's a 41% chance that we're going to close above 190 by the December expiration. Everybody okay with that? Conversely, that means there's a what chance of being below 190? We'll call it a 60% chance. Round it to 60%. So, what this says, if I put this trade on, if I sold the 190 and bought the 195, going down this trade, I have a 60% chance of making pretty much the $2. Sound reasonable? That's how it works. Okay, because the options are breaking down that exact curve up there. This is just breaking down the probability by every single strike. Everybody okay to that point? So if I left the trade alone, if I just put it on, left it alone, no stop in place, by expiration, there should be a 60% chance of me making some money on it. Somebody's going to ask, what's going to happen to me the other 40% of the time? Don't worry, I'll find out.
I would know.
Remember this, it's the probability of expiring. The question is, what's the probability of it touching the short strike? Well, I don't know. Let's go check it out. I'm going to change the information around the probability of touching. The probability of it touching the 190 strike is 84%. So now, for those of you that are engineers, run the math on it. There's going to be a tough one. You have 1,000 of these trades, 60% of them should make money if you just did what?
That's the
wrong. That's the wrong. You'll never find that out. Because 85% of the time, you would have done what? Stopped out early. It is mathematically impossible using sell-side spreads to make money in the long run should you stop yourself out. That is why professionals do not use stop orders, period. All you do is define your risk in the trade. If you don't like the idea of losing $3, okay, do less contracts or don't even do the trade. Leave it alone. All you do is put a spread on and leave it alone. Everybody wants to use some order type. They typically get you in trouble. Because what's the probability the underlying can go all the way to 210? By expiration, it's all going to be back to 160. You have no idea. A lot of customers don't understand that selling premium isn't just about direction. Selling premium is about letting change decay or time decay work in your favor. How much time did you let when you work in your favor if you put this position on, if you put the short spread on, and a week from now the market's rallied against you, like, oh damn, I'm getting killed. A week has passed. You have between what, now and what, 55 days from now? Okay? A lot of time for stuff to happen. Show them, just go ahead.
What I meant when I said stop loss was on naked option, without a spread. What about, what are your thoughts on putting a stop loss on a put that you sold, and later on converting to a spread as it goes, how does that sound to you?
Alright. I got also some feelings about naked options. There's only one reason anybody in this room should ever, ever sell a naked put. Okay? And I'll tell you what, I sell naked puts all the time. But I'm also, if I'm ever going to sell a naked put, there's only one place I'll do it, and that's where?
IRA.
An index?
An index product. only sell naked pussy in index products. Okay? Why would you sell a naked foot other than to get long stock? As a trading strategy, I'm honest. Selling naked foot sucks. As a trading strategy, it's terrible. If you want to be an investor and sell naked put in order to get long stock, I love it. But in the long run, okay, selling naked put will destroy you as a trading strategy. Sooner or later, you're going to get absolutely annihilated on selling naked put. Come to our office. We got 50 guys in the office. Oh, about 5 or 6 of them have been annihilated selling naked put right before the crash of 87. They got caught again in the crash of 89. Okay? I got caught with my group in 1998, 3 weeks after starting the trade. I got caught in 2001, naked short strangle in the SPX. That's the fear that you do not want to sit with.
Okay?
There's no stop orders in the SPX. There's no stop orders in any. Hang on. There are no stops. No stops in any product should the market go loss limit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many people here know what loss limit even is? One day you'll wake up, we're locked limit. Market doesn't trade. How do you get out of your position? You don't. There's only one savior in a locked up market. You might get lucky, they may open up the bond market. Okay, do you guys know what that means? You can buy some bonds to offset the risk. Customers can't really do that. Okay, there is no way to stop yourself out of a position that goes horribly wrong when you sell a naked put. We just haven't seen it in the last couple of years. Okay? And I'll tell you, going back even further, I mean, the markets have been much more volatile than we saw the last couple of weeks. Most of you guys have not traded in real volatility yet. So I encourage you not to utilize naked options, even in the indexes, because you're never going to be completely protected. I would rather see you utilize spreads and or ratios in some ways, okay, because it's only a matter of time. There's also one other thing. Whatever trade that you do, okay, whether you buy, whether you sell, at some point, there's always, whatever the trade is, there's a 100% chance that sooner or later you will take a 100% loss. Every finest trade you can think of. Like, does anybody here sell iron condors far, far out of the money? Okay? It's okay. As long as you can sustain the fact that you're going to take a 100% loss one of these days. People go, that can't possibly happen. The market as a whole will go as far out of its way as possible to screw each and every one of you individually. Everything can and will happen. Just be aware of that. And this is the side of the market again. You know, and I think you guys know a lot of classes, there's a lot of hype at them. Let me tell you, there's no more hype when you get to think of it, because every one of us has been on the wrong side of the worst position that you've even heard of. Okay? We look at your positions on a day-to-day basis and we're like, that's nothing. Okay? A couple years ago, I was naked short and the market was crashing. You know, it's not a fun place to be. And we don't want the customers on the wrong side of that. Forget about that risk for us. We don't care. We don't want to see you get crushed in the market. There's no reason to risk 30% of an account. You know, one naked short position. Yeah. You know what I would say to you about selling naked options? Why sell naked puts when you can sell naked calls? In an index. I never understood that. Why would you sell naked puts in an index? Why not sell some naked calls? Yeah, but fighters and shoes. Why not sell naked calls? There's no risk that the market's going to explode and crash up. However, when it hits resistance, fair enough, you can sell naked puts.
I'm going to sell the puts.
All right, that's fair enough. Okay. But when you sell the puts, you'd rather utilize spreads. Even the major index products. Use futures against it. There's a lot of cool stuff you can do. All right. So let's kind of jump into it. Any questions on something I just threw up there? Because now I'm actually going to get into, like, I'll follow a real straight line here and try to actually something from getting
ahead. I'll start now.
All right. Questions, comments, anything right now? All right. So let's talk a little bit about volatility and pricing. Okay. So I guess talk about theoretical pricing volatility and then talk about a little bit more about market neutrality. So that'll work out just fine. We'll draw another curve. Ooh, that one came out even better. Where's the spider at right now? Spider's a lot more. I use the spiders all the time when I teach. So, for those of you that have never been to a class that I've taught before, I use the spiders. If there's one bias that I will try to rub off on every customer in here, okay? There's one bias. I don't even care if your client thinks it's coming back. Trade the index product, you're much better off. Trade the index product, you're much better off. Better liquidity, better get offer spread, okay? Deeper markets, unbelievable depth. The speed at which you fill, dollar strike increments. I mean, I can go on for an hour about why it's better to trade a spider over a Google or a RIM. Okay? However, I know you guys like taking directional positions. Sure, take a shot on a Google. Take a shot on a RIM. Okay, take a shot on Apple. That's fine. But the bulk of your capital, it's hard to create a bigger position in an Apple, in a RIM, in a Google. And anybody try to do that? Multiple trades on one underlying. What I can't stand is the fact that like some customers, they'll put one really big trade in something like an Apple. And that's hard to make money that way. Because one day you're up huge, the next day you're getting killed, you're fluctuating as much as the market is. My account guaranteed moves a lot less than almost anybody in this room in terms of day-to-day profitability. You know, a few grand up, a few grand down, that is it. That's $250,000 in pure options. That's all I'm ever going to fluctuate, okay? It's not out of my mind. Yeah, maybe like a 1%, 2% fluctuation. The biggest single fluctuation that I've seen in my account was this last expiration cycle. We had a 366-point down day in the Dow. My God, that was fantastic. Everybody was short. Everybody in our office was short. I mean, our customers are getting killed when the market's going down. Apple is crushing people. There's guys in our office just going, woohoo! Cash had to get like, I'll pay later. Absolutely. Indexes, ETFs, same animal. And the spiders are an ETF. IWM is an ETF. You'll also hear me at this point, I'm never going to talk about the RUT. I'm not going to talk about the NDX, and I'm not even going to talk about the XTX anymore today. Because at this level, unless you have significant experience routing trades, stay away from the big boy products. Seriously, pay the commission, trade the little products. The reason is, that's completely server-based exchange. You have every advantage in the world. When I say it's a server-based exchange, if I were to route a trade during market hours, okay, somewhere right at that market, I'll be filled in 0.2 seconds before the message is back. Now, route a trade into the FTX. Obviously, the trade in the spiders goes through my computer, skims the secrets from servers, and hits one of the six option exchanges, and still instantaneously. I got a secret for you. Of those six option exchanges, the option exchanges, a lot of the time, like the spiders, they exist in one box. One box can run six exchanges simultaneously, can it? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one box is filling your trade. Quite interesting. So, there's, like, one market taker for all six exchanges. And you know what our customers do? They're like, I directed it toward the ICE. Yeah, well, the same guy in the ICE saw you over there, and the Pico saw you over there in the Amex, so real good. All right. By the way, we just put new technology into our routing system to make it even more proficient. So the trades are going to get even better in terms of how we fill just in this last release. It was a big, big upgrade in how we route trades. So, moving right along. I had no idea where I was going with this. All right, so. Spider. Fill instantaneously 0.2 seconds. FTX, how's the FTX go? Goes through your computer, skims the tickers and servers, goes to the Chicago Board Options Exchange only. That's the only place the FTX exists. And it comes up on two monitors. The monitors are called a PAR station. Okay? There's a guy stands in the pit. His name is Pete. Okay? So Pete stands in the pit, and then he stands in front of 350 people and screams your order to the crowd. Pete, in a big down day, get about 800 orders in about 5 minutes. Now there's one Pete, and you're only allowed to have one floor broker per trader, okay, per broker dealer. So therefore, only one person can represent Thinkorswim in the FTX. Pete Brown is hands down the best floor broker on the entire street. Okay, we've been using that guy since we opened Thinkorswim. We used to use him when we traded on the floor to do our FTX trades. He's awesome. There's still only one peak, and we have 50,000 customers to use, okay? We've got three backups for them. There's actually, like, people that stand 3 feet behind them. They're like, Pete, yell this one out. Yell it out. He's great. In terms of a day, we're not volatile. On a volatile day, your chances of getting out are zero. You can put a market order in the SPX, they don't give a crap. They're never going to look at trade. You think I'm going to do a 10 lot? He's paid per contract. He doesn't work directly for the company, the contractor. He's going to do the 100 lots, the 1,000 lots. Why? Because the guy that does 1,000 lot of paper swim has $50 million with him. He knows he needs to take care of that customer. And people are like, that is so unfair. Well, that's the reality of the SPX. That is why you got to be careful in the products that you trade. And it'll make sense. Now you'll know, like, maybe I shouldn't trade that product as much. And I agree with that. And you know what? I rip on the SPX all the time, and I rip on the OES. And you guys do know that the OES kit was started. Tom Sosnoff was the first market maker ever in the OES kit. And we don't trade it anymore. Okay? The first floor broker ever in the OES kit works for Thinkorswim. His name is Frank Walsh. Okay? And the other, you know Frank, right? And the other 50 people that sit on our desk, whether SPX or OES trading, we don't trade those products anymore because we now, as retail customers, feel that there is no advantage in this. So for those of you that do like to trade a big product, the RUT or the NDX, still have to have significant experience in order to do that. Stick with these little products. They're so much better. Yeah, they're more commission intensive. And I'm telling you that as a broker, they're more commission intensive. Okay? All right. Moving right along in here, we talk about probability. So, the spiders right now are trading at 154. Here they are, right around 154. Now notice, the 154 calls are trading what? 470. The 154 puts are trading 450. Again, you notice the calls are a little bit overpriced versus the puts. The reason the calls are overpriced versus the puts is the what?
Going up.
Not going up. That's not the reason. Okay? There is not more upside potential in spiders anymore. The downside potential that could not be reflected in there. And if it was, don't you think there's some guy Carol tied up in the basement that would have figured that one out a couple years ago? All right. I mean, so, there's an interest rate component built into you. You notice these puts are even a little bit in the money and they're still trading, you know, less. All right. So look at the probability here. There's about a 49.6% chance here and mostly about a 50% chance here. It's about a 50-50 shot with the one up or down. So the first question I always get about probability. Forget about the option price. I don't care if it's 470. I don't care if it's 430. I want you guys to start focusing more on the probability. And I'm going to make it even easier. I'm going to take the probability of touching options, deal pricing. Okay? So, taking a look at these probabilities over here, you can build trades via the probability. How do you do that? Well, look over here. About a 42% chance of being above or below the 156 level. Now, let's be clear what the 42% chance means. It means there's a 42% chance that this option will fall in the money by December expiration, period. It does not mean that there's a 42% chance that if I buy this, I'm going to make money. Everybody aware of that? Okay, so that's important. So if there's a 40% chance of being above 156, if you buy the 156 call for 350, you don't need it at 156, you need it more like what?
158.
159. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Obviously, the probability of being there is going to be greatly what? It's going to be greatly diminished. What's the probability of being at 159? Like 30%. So please, keep that in mind when buying premiums. So we talk about a lot is selling premiums. Before I get to any buying or selling premium, it's important to understand, where do these probabilities even come from? How are probabilities derived from option prices? Alright? That is one of the coolest things that nobody really understands. I mean, you guys look at the platform and you're like, it told me 40% chance. Do you believe probabilities on here are relatively accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Davey?
You
just kind of accept,
like,
oh,
the hell does it
they kind of
know what they're doing?
Yeah. 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 We're just trusting in the...
That's what we're going to talk about really quick. So let's say, think about this here. Spiders right now are 150. Oh, perfect. You have a 20% vol. These spiders have a 20% vol right now. What does that really mean? 20% of 154. Anyone?
30.
Let's make this even easier. Okay. We have engineers in here that apparently aren't all there.
It's okay.
It's really easy
for those of you not mathematically inclined. 20% vol on a $100 stock. What does that really mean? First of all, what is volatility? Let's define volatility, and then we'll move from there. What is volatility? Oh, I got 20% volatility right there, so we'll talk about that in a moment. Okay. All volatility is it's actually a pick style calculation of implied volatility. We're way beyond averaging out the money, you know, calls and puts. You need to do that stuff. All right? So, when somebody asks you guys what volatility is, what's your standard answer to volatility? Think about that. Volatility can't possibly be movement. Now, some people say fear. You're right on the right track.
Controlling vega,
okay. Volatility itself is risk. In other words, the risk. That's what an option is. You put a price tag on risk. Now, he said movement. Secondary definition. Given secondary definition. However, when somebody says, oh, that stock is volatile, most of you are implying that stock can move a lot. But the real implication there is the stock is what? Risky. Okay? So, let's talk about that for a second here in terms of the marketplace. If you look at the Dow, and the Dow on Monday, we're going to go up 500 points. Where does volatility go?
Down.
Why does volatility go down? That's a huge move. You told me volatility is movement. Huge move. Volatility gets crushed.
Many buyers.
So what literally causes volatility to change? Nothing. Because it has nothing to do with the stock. Volatility is not measured on stock. It is measured in terms of options. The risk premiums go down. Why? 99.9% of the American public is long stock. Dow goes up 500 points. You're cheering. Bob Pisani on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange doing backflips over there. All right? Nobody cares. Why volatility collapses. How do you look at volatility of the S&P 500? Type in the what? The VIX. If you are not looking at the VIX, you better start looking at the VIX. Be successful trading options. I don't care if you're trading an option on Apple or RIM. If you're not familiar with what the VIX is doing, okay, the VIX is one of the best indicators of the entire marketplace. You could be trading Apple all you want. Apple's going to keep rallying. Oh, yeah? You saw the VIX, okay, and watch the VIX. When the VIX started going up on the day, I bet you anything Apple ain't going rally anymore. Okay, if Apple is high, you can get 500. That also turns down. For those of you that are technicians, you have a tendency to bury your head in one chart and not look at the entire market for you. So VIX, okay, in a day that we go down 500 points in the Dow,
yay,
it goes down. Volatility goes where?
Absolutely
explodes. Okay? The volatility absolutely explodes as the market starts to tank. The real question is, why is volatility expanding when the market is tanking? Specifically, it's what?
Fear.
What actually causes it? Forget the fear. We know that there's fear. Okay? What do people do?
Sell.
They buy puts. Remember, this is important. Options are what measure the volatility, not the stock. The fact that everybody's selling stock doesn't mean anything to volatility. It's the fact that they're selling stock causing risk for fund managers. The fund managers then turn around and buy puts. On a really big down day, you will see the VIX spiking. And what that basically happens is, you'll see the VIX flat on the day, the next tick, it'll be up 3. The next tick, it'll be up 4. It's not going to trade linear. It doesn't all of a sudden creep up. And the reason that happens, when everybody is freaking out, okay, a fund manager will come into the SPX pit, okay, and he'll basically call all or none 1,000 at the money put. You know what that means? Work through 1,000 contracts of an at the money put, all at one trade at one price. So what effectively happens is they'll look at the SPX and they say, okay, the after monies right now are trading at $12.82, you know, theoretically. If I do 1,000 of them, we'll do the whole 1,000 at $18.
What does the fund manager say? Done. Fine.
Okay.
All of a sudden, the option goes from trading at $12.80 to $18 like that. And you'll see the pick spike $3 in 2 seconds. You're like, oh my God! Oh my God, it's right. Okay? Because everybody seems to know what's going on except you at that point. However, and then you know what you're going to see? The moment the VIX spikes, the VIX goes, boom, right through the roof. Then what do you see? In conjunction with it, instantaneously, set all the options to the entire S&P 500. All of a sudden, boom, it explodes. You'll also see something very dramatic. Does anybody know what it is? Before the VIX ever is going to spike, okay, like that, you'll typically see what happens. What's going to happen in the future? The futures will sell off right before the VIX is going to spike. Okay? How do you know that? Because if there's a giant trade in the SPX pit, there's only one place in the world that everybody in the SPX pit wants to hedge. And what they do is they will sell the puts, and then they will sell the futures, and you will see that trade happening. As it happens in the pit, you can see everything that's going on in the trading pit if you watch the S&P 500 futures. Everybody in the pit, that's all they look at is the futures and the pit. There's no new services, there's nothing. They don't care about anything except the futures and the mix, and that's it. That's their entire world. Okay? So, if you think about that for a second, does that make sense, by the way? Why do the futures move? Anybody know? Why do the futures move when the market makers are trading options? Options and futures have a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the S&P 500, yes? It's a future, the S&P 500, yes? So could you use a future as a hedge against the option? That's what they're intended for, that's what they were designed for. So what a market maker does is they'll sell naked puts, and then they'll use the futures as a definitive hedge against that. Okay? The really good market makers sell the futures before they even sell the puts. That way the hedge is on, and they lock it before they even build the trade.
That's how that works, the future. I know what it is, but I don't know how it works.
The futures are pretty easy. You can buy them, or you can sell them. A couple things I'll say about the future. Number one thing, you should always watch the future. Number two thing, don't trade the future. Futures are one of the most dangerous products for retail customers. And I always tell people this, and Frank named them this, and he called them chocolate-covered hand grenades. I wouldn't even paper trade. You know why I wouldn't even paper trade? Because they're open 23 hours and 45 minutes of every single day. Yeah, they're also the crack of the trading world. One day you're going to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're going to find yourself looking at the future. What are they doing? What are they doing? What's going on over here? Okay, you're going to be absolutely nuts with those things. And you'll start trading them at 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, and then they fall downhill by the way from there. The average customer will last 3.5 weeks trading futures directionally. That is the average customer. Okay, that's not a think or swim statistic. That's an industry-wide. Did you ever tell you guys that? Outside the nose, then. Okay, they're one of the most dangerous products. However, every professional utilizes the futures, but they don't utilize them in a directional fashion. They utilize them to do what? It's all ahead. And that's the whole product of trading them. Okay? Imagine today you saw the futures up 17.5. You glance back at your screen, and now they're up 1 on the day. Literally turned for 2 seconds. 17, up 1. Oh, unfortunately, you own one of those futures when that happens. You basically just lost 15 points. Each 1 point, if you own one future, is worth $50. Okay? You do the math. 16 times 5, you're not really happy. Okay? They don't trade in a linear fashion. Futures can jump dramatically in short periods of time. The last Fed announcement, the futures were up 9. The very next tick, they were up 33, okay, on the news of the Fed. So they move very, very rapidly, and a lot of customers can't handle that either. What about my stop order? Alright, so moving right along with this example. In terms of volatility, volatility can spike in a very, very short time, indicating, obviously, significantly more risk in the marketplace. And that's what volatility says. It is, you know, significantly more risk. That's how it happens. All right, so now that there's more risk, okay, this
20% and go up. But let's look at this. Let's say we have a $100 stock at a 20% vol. What that really means,
within 1 year of time, that stock can move up 20% or down 20%.
So if I broke this into a deviation, okay? Wait a second, let's make this $100 stock with a greater ratio there. Let's make this $100 stock and say it can move up 20 bucks or down 20 bucks. So it can move to 120 or it can move down to where?
80.
80. And it will stay in that range approximately 68.3% of the time. So where did you come up with that? Now that's 1 year. Where is the 68.3% of the time come out of it to what? Standard deviation.
Oh my God, there's going to be math in here.
One standard deviation cost me 68.3. Wait, just mentioned years ago, they always say this. I'm like, when I went to school for 67% of the time, guess what, they got me shooters. I was literally in school in a statistics class, and like one day we walked in, the guy goes, they have a server, I don't even know what that is. Now the real number is 68.3. And you remember that when they changed it? Okay? Alright. Some of you went to school a little bit before me. Alright. So moving right along with it. 68.3% of the time, we're going to stay between 80 and 120. But that's broken down to 1 year, and volatilities are always quoted annualized. So when you look on a trade screen on thinkorswim, on the right-hand side of the screen, this is important, you're always seeing implied volatility. Now that's implied volatility for any given what? Month. However, even though it's for a given month, it's still annualized for 1 year. So if you know percentage-wise how far this stock can move within a year, okay, could you build a trade based on that? Yes, you could also literally divide by what? 12 and figure out how far the stock can move every what?
Every month.
But there's a formula that literally takes the square root of 365, what is it? Oh, it's the number of trading days left. So let's say there's what? The number of trading days left, the square root of number of trading days left, like 55, over 365, and it'll actually give you the implied volatility. Plus volume here of like 20%. That's actually the formula, I believe. Yeah, the square root of trading days times the volatility divided by 365 will give you actually the estimated move. You guys want it, I'll email it to you. It's not important at all. I should probably cover it up there. What's that? There's about 55 trading days out here. I'll show you. I can't remember what it was anymore. I remember putting it together when we were building things. But anyway, that's how we derive the probability. And what's kind of cool about it, and you know what? We're also talking about the analyze tab today. Oh yeah. The most feared tab in the history of software. What do you guys think this giant thing is?
Probability. Let's see, it says probability, doesn't it?
It's a giant probability model. People, this is literally the most feared thing. Oh, first thing I want to show you why. We need to reset. I'm just trying to make you see that. Right. Notice it's kind of hard to read right now. The first thing you do when you come in here, you just take your little mouse right on these numbers and kind of drag it out so it's easier to see. All this does, whenever you drag them out, and as fast as you drag them out, the probability is you're going to drop below that So, close enough. I just clicked it to 160. Now, what this does, it says, what's the probability of being above below 160? And it'll break it down by expiration. Now, the important thing to know is that is based on what the current implied volatility is. Where is the implied volatility? Max dab at 20%. But maybe you don't believe that that's the right volatility, so change it. You can do that. Okay? But what's so cool about this, how many people honestly use it before getting there out of every single trade? I'm telling you, you would never ever buy a call ever again if you look at the probability of being successful on that trade. It's one of the reasons we built probability here. Now, if this page freaks you out, it should, okay? You never have to go into the analyze tab to really do a random trade stream. If you open up the trade stream, you'll notice that the probability is listed right here.
Now, there's going to be a geek in here, for sure, that has figured out this. Has anybody looked at the probability of the firing of a trade stream? Anybody done that?
Yeah.
Have you guys looked at it and seen that it's different from the probability over an analyze tag? Because we actually have two different types of implied volatility solved that way. It is intentional. Because you have some geeks that like certain implied volatility, and one solve the other. The one over in the analyze tag is a Dick style calculation. This is using individual implied volatility here. Which is more accurate? I don't know. Depends on what school of thought you come from. We're talking about a point, you know, two difference, so in there. But there's always a math piece in the room. So. Anyway, moving right along here. You break this down by a probability. So everybody asks where the probabilities come from? Probabilities are derived from the volatility. Okay? But what else does volatility determine? Volatility determines every option price within that chain. Okay? And then the next question everybody always asks, well, are the volatilities and probabilities accurate? Right now, there's $1 billion being traded on either side of this 157 call. What do you think? Is it accurate?
Yeah.
So the reason that I'll assume that everything I see on my screen, and every liquid product, the reason I assume that everything I see is accurate, okay, is because every major banking firm in the world now is making markets in there. And I also know that every major bank sees everybody else is just. Okay? They couldn't wait for UBS to make a mistake so Merrill can jump on them. Okay? Everybody on the street hates Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns makes markets in everything. Does everybody know that? Okay? There's one thing that's unified in the street. Although all the banks hate each other, all the banks love to hate Bear Stearns. That goes back to 1998 during the long-term capital crisis. Bear Stearns refused to lend money and everybody else had to lend $300 million. And to this day, there's the biggest grudge against Bear Stearns ever. Okay, so they can't wait for somebody to misprice something for a fraction of a second, and they're going to attack that firm. So assume that everything in the screen is extremely accurate. And we want you guys to be able to use these probabilities to deconstruct and trade. And that's exactly what we're headed towards now is let's talk about how do you construct trades around probability. First of all, find a product you like. Are reasonable? Okay, if you like directional trades, find a directional trade. Myself, I'm much more of a market neutral trader. Okay? For years, what I go out and do, I'll sell crap on this side of the market, sell junk on this side of the market, hope we stay within a range. There are times when I will sit back and I'm totally directional. I think we're going to be bullish. I think we're going to be bearish. I don't care. I try to remove that from my trading. The reason is, okay, there's a lot of things that I can be in the market. I can be right. I can be wrong. There's one thing I know about directional trading. You can't be consistent. It's really hard to be consistent in a directional trader. And I cannot allocate $250,000 in option strategy being inconsistent, okay? Because I'm going to sit in front of my computer for 6 hours a day then, and I'm going to freak out. And that's what a lot of customers do. It is more consistent and easier to sell premium on both sides of the market and then just try to manage the risk when you're wrong. And that's what professionals in this industry do. In fact, if you think about like 5 years ago, there were market makers standing on a floor. Okay? So that's how much the world has changed. 5 years ago, there was actual trading. All these market makers standing on the floor, and they all wanted to do the other side of your trade. First thing is, why do they want to take the other side of your trade?
Because you're wrong.
You can't all be wrong, though. Okay? See, that's a common misconception. They'll take the other side of anything that you do. To this day, the market-making firm still will take the other side of anything you do. Why do they do it? Sometimes there's a spread. Now the spread is all but gone. Okay? The bid-offer spread is completely crushed. So now they had to fire everybody off the trading floor because you just couldn't pay for the overhead. Right? And what did they do? I mean, like literally, there was a big firm about 2.5 years ago. The firm was called Susquehanna. Anybody ever heard of them before?
Mm-hmm.
Big, big this firm walks on the floor and they go, you're all fired. Get the hell out. They literally walked on the floor after the bell went off and did that. And then they started rolling servers in. And, you know, I know one of the guys that runs part of it. He wasn't happy about it. All the guys that work for him on the floor are pretty good friends of his. And they did it in a pretty rude fashion. They go, look, we don't have to feed them. We don't have to pay them bonuses. Like, these servers don't talk back. It's awesome. Okay? And you know what happened to Susquehanna after that? Their gross profitability, okay, The actual amount of money they made decreased by about 40% because the spread tightened so much. That's how the firm was making money, a bit off the spread. The entire profitability of the firm dropped by 40%. Okay, their net profit increased by 60%. That's awful. They fired everybody, rolled servers in, got hired a bunch of developers and stuff, and they're killing it now. And by the way, their profitability is right back up to where it was, because where before, you had X number of people working for you, you could only do so many trades in a day. Server don't care, just keep plugging more in and plugging more in, right? And you can trade 10 million times in a day in tiny little arbitrage to make fractions of a penny. It is the opening for retail because they don't care about trying to nick you and rip you off anymore. They want to make a fraction of a penny. What do you care about that? You got facilitated, okay? But years ago, I want you to think about this, market makers, when they made a market, they had to make a little bit of edge on you, okay? What they still would do the other side of your trade. So how could a market maker make money just taking the other side of their jump? Okay. So what does that mean? So they hedge. But really, how are they making money? Nobody seems to ask themselves this question. Because the market maker, all right, and that's why I like to look at stuff from a market maker perspective, and it really is, today, same money in the series can trade just like any other market maker can trade. Right? Because you're not giving up anything that offers spread. So how can a market maker, okay, that doesn't decide what they want to do, they can't decide what they want to do. You can decide what you want to do, right? So you have an advantage over them now. Think about that. Okay, what are your advantages in this business? Right now. Well, step away from market maker talk for a second. What are your advantages over everybody else?
Speed.
Okay? You get to see what you want when you want. Single biggest advantage right there. You get to see what you want when you want. Oh, wait, I forgot about something. Your preferential treatment. Your order is tagged with an R. Every professional industry is tagged with a DD. What that simply means is this. See this marker right here, 340 to 350? Try to buy an option right in the middle of 345. You're trying to buy two contracts at 345. Goldman's trying to buy 500. At 345. Goldman put their order in 2 hours ago. You put your order in right now. If that option trades at 345, you step to the front of the line. And be aware of that. Because retail customers for years were getting pushed to the back of the line. They finally fought back and they said, I want preferential treatment. The CEO goes, good idea. Actually, the rules came out in the 80s that happened. And they were not strictly enforced. Well, they couldn't enforce them because orders were held by hand. And a broker in the pit would be like, who's captain one lot and throw it around? Now the servers cue everything. There's no way to trade around retail customers. But sometimes you guys come in with a cue lot. Anybody ever had this? You come in with a real small trade right at the mid-price and you're like, still instantaneously. You know why they do that? To get you off and out of their way. You are a complete and total nuisance. That's why you want to trade really, really liquid products, too. They just want you off the book to tie up their market of 343 tickets. So now, I want you to think of the customer. You have an advantage. Do what you want when you want at your price. You get to trade first. What other advantage do you have? You have better software and technology than any market maker pretty much has. Okay? People are like, really? Well, guess what? There's a guy I think is his name is Tom Preston. Okay? He actually built a firm that was called MicroHedge. MicroHedge to this day is a software that's used by every single market maker down there. Alright? Back to Stefano even uses MicroHedge. Sneaker Swim is way beyond MicroHedge. Okay? Because that's where we grabbed Tom Preston. In fact, Tom Preston built most of the analyzer part in here also. I know some of you have listened to the demo on there. He's a really exciting, upbeat guy here. He's as dry as poop, man. He's low-key. If he even talks to you, it's a privilege. Even speak to Tom Preston because he doesn't talk very much. And when he does, numbers start coming out. He doesn't like this, but I actually walk by his office one day and drop a few pics and I go, come on, Rainy Man, come in. You have to have thick skin to work in that place. So it's important to understand. So every, you guys have every advantage in the world. However, customers don't understand what you're doing. Alright. So one of the things, and the biggest disconnect between you and any professional in the industry, this is kind of what I'm getting at.
market makers don't worry about finding trades. They don't have the time to find trades. Most of you are better trade finders. What customers are really, really bad at, you guys are really bad risk managers. You're great trade finders and horrific at risk management. And in the end, what makes money in this business is not trade finding, it really is risk management. Everybody on the professional side knows that, and we're trying to push that thought to you. That it's really a risk management business, not I can find the perfect trade. Because if you can find the perfect trade, don't you think all the market makers are trying to do the same thing? Do you think they would step up and take anything? No. The reason they're willing to do any trade with you, okay, is because they want to trade around what you're doing. They like to create positions around anything. Okay? So most professionals in this industry, they're inventory managers. They're not like traders. They don't take a position and say, I'm bullish or I'm bearish. They like to sell stuff, and they're just trying to manage the risk around anything they sell. And to kind of explain that like a little bit more, I'm going to give you a big, big logic here about market neutrality. Being market neutral. Another curve. Wow, it's like our third one today. Okay? The simple thing of being market neutral, like these are the spiders at 154, I sell junk out here and I sell junk out here. Does that make sense? Okay? So, for instance, like I sell, the 162s, and how far out of the money is that? Like 8 bucks? 8 bucks out of the money on this side? What?
140.
Yeah, 146. I'm just ballparking it. So, I got out, I sold some calls, and I sold some puts. Now, is that relatively market neutral? The answer is yes. Now, let's make a distinction here. People have heard the term delta neutral, and people have heard the term market neutral. We're not advocates of being what they call delta neutral. Delta neutral is keeping zero directional risk in your portfolio at any given point. How do you do that? Well, you have to trade all day long and all day long. You have to try to keep your portfolio perfectly balanced. This is what we consider a market neutral position. It starts off nice and balanced. Now, you notice I sold naked calls and I sold naked puts. Okay, yeah, we don't really advocate that. Obviously, you would buy some type of a hedge. Okay? When you go out and put a trade on like that, that's considered a what? The Iron Condor, the most feared trade owned most retail customers. How easy is that? Sell out of Minecraft and buy other junk to hedge off the junk that you sold. Right? Yeah. That's it. Okay? But the strategy itself doesn't really make any money. The criteria behind this is so simple. You go out, you sell premium, in fact, everybody that's in groups, if you want, I can email the head of your group a file on Iron Condors. Has all the criteria, anybody have that yet that I've emailed in the past? Okay? I know I emailed it to somebody. It's just a file about Iron Condors and vertical spreads, all the criteria, so they'll get in and out of just an Iron Condor. Okay? And it'll step-by-step take you through the thought process and the probabilities, it'll give you everything for an Iron Condor. I'd rather just email it to you guys and have you email it out to your group, rather than explain it for an hour here, because I did it, you know, yesterday. When we're back in town in a couple of weeks, we'll do just that. I mean, we'll spend the entire day. Let's not waste time on that. Let's get more into the theory and logic behind it. The Iron Condor itself does not, the strategy doesn't make money. Seriously, like if you just put on Iron Condor, Iron Condor, Iron Condor, one a month, every single month, in the long run,